B.A.B. Monty. That rock. That part that's way too frail, they need to cut it. They just want to see us fail, they need to cut it. Cut it, 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 cut it. That part that's way too frail, they need to cut it. They just want to see us fail, they need to cut it.
You tried to test our readiness, it's too dumb. The test is with the pettiness, it's too long. The life that we go through, it make us too strong. We looking at the proctors like what you are.
Cut it, truck it, duck it, buck it, yeah. Snuff it, pluck it, stuff it, shove it there.
Whole time, we got problems you won't find. You say the students, they don't cry like we gotta say cheese, they mean read.
And that was Cut It, new piece by the Algebra Project, taking on the park tests here in Baltimore. We're joined here right now by Jordan Najee Leonard, who is business manager of the Baltimore Algebra Project, and Jamal Jones, co-director of the Baltimore Algebra Project. And welcome, gentlemen. Good to have you both in the studio.
Hey, thanks, man.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
So the park test, which have been given across the state, which we'll talk about what just happened with them, but you're suggesting, Algebra Project obviously is suggesting that students boycott the test, not take the test.
Exactly.
Right? So who wants to begin? Why?
Well, fundamentally, we believe that standardized testing simply as a method of measuring student success is fundamentally flawed. Particularly, this can be seen for low-income populations and populations of color, in that their scores tend to be across the board lower in all of these areas. And essentially, what this signals to the students at schools across the country is that by the standards of whosoever is measuring us, we are incompetent, we are inadequate, we are unable to perform. And so what the students are suggesting here is that as opposed to standardized tests, we find some other more meaningful measure that actually displays the abilities and the qualities of these students.
So, okay.
And the other thing that's really important is just that fundamentally, like on a very foundational level, we're talking about that there's a question mark of whether or not folks, young people, are given the things that they need, right? Do we really need standardized tests that don't technically, well, don't typically help the average student in these low-income kind of areas? Or will we be able to use those millions of dollars in a very different way to help impact those young people? And so not only are we calling for a boycott of the park test, but we're also calling for that money to be redirected to youth jobs. Because what we do know is that folks with jobs tend to have a better lifestyle. There are indications and statistics all over the place that essentially support the idea of folks having employment decreasing all kinds of negative attributes to communities.
So looking at these tests, I mean, there are a lot of people who oppose these tests for lots of reasons across the board, no matter where you live in the state of Maryland, and testing across the country has become a big issue no matter what community you're in. So the question, how do you address the question when you look at that in more affluent communities where the test is being taken, and people don't want to take them there either? We'll come to that whole question in a minute. But the test scores are really different. So, I mean, obviously much more kids are passing the math and reading tests in places like Severna Park than they are in Baltimore City. A wealthy system, wealthy neighborhood, access to different things. So is the question that these tests when the kids get the results that it gives them a negative image of themselves, A, or B, and or B, that the tests show how our schools are not preparing our students?
I think it's both. I think it's fair to call for both. I think if you paid attention to one of the lyrics in the song, the young man Munchie or Darius Hill, shout out to Munchie, but he actually quotes that one of his lyrics is just, do you want low self-esteem to be a consequence? Because part of this is that younger folks, and I mean a lot of folks in these communities, they don't really understand the difference, or people don't really get the alienation between like the test. There's a dissonance between the test and those folks. And so like this type of measurement can have all kinds of negative impacts on folks. I actually work in Douglas High School, and there's another test that folks take regularly, the iReady test. And students get their scores back from those things, and that disrupts the entire learning environment for the rest of the day when you get told, hey, look, you're not on grade level, you're X amount of grade levels behind, and you need to get it together. Because also behind those tests, it's like you have to pass it or else negative consequence, negative consequence. But if I demonstrate that with the preparation or lack of preparation I was given, I can't do it, my hands are tied.
So just to push a little further, because we've covered this whole testing issue a whole lot on this program over the years. And you know, one of the things I always say, I've been saying for the last 23 years in the air around this testing, is that if you look at the private schools in Baltimore, which have an incredibly powerful system of schools throughout the metropolitan area, Gilman Park, Friends, all of them, right? They don't do standardized testing. They maybe have one test a year that at the end of the year.
Right.
And it's mostly kind of course-based work. But you take – so I've always said, so why should we treat our children any differently than we treat rich kids' children who go to these private schools? But when you see that – 13% pass rate for African-American students in the state in this particular test in math, that 65% of Asian kids, most of the ones who are from upper middle-class families, pass English tests, only 20% of black children do, or 13% of economically disadvantaged kids, 5% of kids who have English as a second language. So well, what does that say to you about what has to happen? In other words, I mean, the tests do indicate something's wrong, right? So – How do you change that? Because we have a system that is an educational system that is geared not to help people of color nor young or poor kids get to the place they need to be. So what does this say to you?
Well, I think that certainly Jamal touched on it earlier with the issue of funding and how that's directed. So what we have here are curriculums and programs which are designed to facilitate a very specific style of learning for a very specific subset of students. As you mentioned, the wealthier private school kids and their curriculums, as well as the more affluent public school children. And what that would then require is a shift from funding of these tests, which sort of just, you know, manage and empower the status quo. And instead, what we need to do is shift to a system that pushes that funding into student jobs or into community-based schools, which provide additional programs and supports for the communities that they're located in.
But, I mean, just push a little further. Just play this for a minute. I mean, so is it really a question of jobs? I mean, I know jobs are important, but is it a question of jobs, or is this more fundamentally a question of how our schools are structured and how we're teaching our young people, especially in poor communities, and how to turn that around? I mean, there are examples of schools all across the country that have focused a lot of energy, and young people of color and poor kids are doing really well, depending on how we structure the school. I mean, so should we be focusing on – if there's only X amount of money in terms of education, should that money be focused on jobs, or money be focused on restructuring our education system so it fits the needs of the young people in our city?
So the philosophy, though, is that jobs and education are not necessarily – two separate things. So one of the things that we talk about when we're talking about these, we speak about these jobs in the language of knowledge, jobs in the knowledge-based economy. And so part of it is, even if a person doesn't want to go into college in a particular and do, study some discipline and grab this student loan debt that all of us are scratching and climbing and digging to get out of, part of it is
right.
These jobs that we're talking about, we're not talking about kind of going to fix a shelf. We're not talking about like, you know, folks going to stock shelves at a grocery store. We're talking about folks having practical, like practical job experience. Like folks could actually, if they want to work for a radio station, young people coming to work for Mark Steiner and working in the studio, learning how to work the equipment, learning how to prep people for the interviews. I think that is a fundamental piece where jobs and education come in hand, and those two things can accelerate one another. And then the other piece, and just a little bit of pushback, is just the educational system we got right now comes from antiquity. Come on, man. It's old. It's just gone. It's antiquated. We can't deal with it anymore, right? And so yes, it calls for it calls for a very new style of
So what does
education.
That mean to you? I mean, so antiquity is a long time ago, but I mean
antiquity, man.
So what does that mean when you say that? I mean, in terms of envisioning the educational system that you think needs to be in place. So, I mean, is this a serious debate's been happening for decades? What do you
right.
mean by that?
So one of those things is, right, the first thing is we all know that the educational system as it is was not created for black students. It's just it wasn't. It was created for those who had the capacity to set up those structures back in the day that also kind of stem over to all the other things that like white supremacist structures are around. I think so acknowledging that we know that the educational system as is, it's just not going to work. We can retool it all we want. It's not built to do what we're trying to get it to do. And so the other thing for me is as we're talking about like the educational system going into a very different space, one of the very critical concerns that needs to be raised is that the people who are most affected by the educational system or the curriculum need to be the ones driving it. They need to be the ones putting it together. They need to be the one piecing it together so that it fits their needs and so that it is relative to folks. I mean, people are much more invested in things. We already know once they are a part of the process. One of the things that happens is when we talk about education, it's usually adults talking about what should happen for younger folks. And to me, that is absurd.
Just play with this for a minute, right?
All right.
But you name me a culture or society. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's a European culture or an Asian culture, or a culture came out of the continent, the mother continent, or whether it comes anywhere in this hemisphere, the ancient cultures, that where it wasn't the elders who taught the young, but they also learned from one another. I mean, in what society do students define all of education? I can't think of one.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We need to get to that.
But
point.
Isn't part of existence? Like you have children, you raise them up. When you raise them up, you're teaching your children how to survive in this world and how to think and how to read and how to write and how to use their minds and expand. Isn't that part of the nature of adult-children relationship? Isn't that part of human existence? Isn't that what we do no matter what the culture is?
So I'd go ahead.
Well, I think that the biggest fundamental difference between what you're describing and what we're proposing to be enacted is that you're speaking of single sort of contained communities. And what we have with our current schooling system is a melding of a variety of communities. And so rather than having, you know, the elders of that group teaching the young their ways and what they need to know, it's often here some other group trying to raise a variety of communities' children. And at that point, what we're missing is a lot of the individual children's cultures and the backgrounds of what they bring from their individual communities. And so what we don't currently have what you're describing as being a common method of elders teaching youngers. And that's what we're trying to put into place through having older young people. So let's say our, you know, 18 to 24-year-old crowd doing the work of educating their near peers and people who are close to them in age but slightly younger.
So where'd you all go to high school, by the way? I forget.
City.
You both went to City, right?
Yes.
I went to City a long time ago. I didn't even get through. I was expelled, but I went to City anyway for a short while. So I did want to ask a question about your kind of how you imagine what a system might look like. But let me come back for a second to the testing. So the idea of boycotting these tests, I mean, there are suburban parents, white and black and Asian, all saying, Latino, saying, opposing these tests as well. And I did a program, I guess it was in Montgomery County, interviewing around these tests. And we had a community forum where a lot of Montgomery County public school parents and teachers were there in this room. And Montgomery County school system is a really racially mixed system. I mean, kids come from all over. It's a very different county than Baltimore City is a city, just right. In terms of demographics. But at any rate, having said that, there was a Russian woman who stood up. Her kids were there, and the black woman, her kids were in the school. They were all talking about boycotting this test because it takes away from real learning. So do you see yourself part of this kind of larger movement of saying no to PARC, is something unique in the way you're saying no to Park?
So I think there's something – I think two things. I think one is that there is a lot of movement around Park. I think Park in particular is one of those galvanizing tests. However, we've had multiple standardized tests. Whenever there's an old – they're out with the old, in with the new for whatever reason. And the other thing is I think that the difference between folks in those other counties saying just no Park tests for the in Baltimore City, the difference would be we're calling for that money to be redirected into a thing that would be more useful. Because I think the fundamental question about what education should be about is what do students need? And I think no one, I think most folks would agree that students don't need these really long, really tiring, really just kind of tedious tests. And I'm pretty sure most folks would believe or agree with the thought that young people could use that money in a different way. Whether it, and may, be it not tests, we're calling for tests, but be it not tests. Maybe it's a different program. Maybe it's some extended learning in some other capacity. Maybe it's to fund project-based assessments. I don't know. But what I do know is that the one, there's a lot of energy around the Park test, and then the other piece is just that it has to be something different. Standardized testing is not a method of measurement that works.
Well,
for us.
Yeah, right. I guess it's a different level of what works. I mean, it works in terms of what's indicating is that our education system is not working.
Right. So it is a measurement
because,
of that.
I mean, because if you have – I mean, what's happening to young people and our students, especially students of color and kids who live in poverty, when they can't read? And if you can't read and write, then you can't think. You can't – the depth of thought goes – I mean, so there's a real problem. We're doing putting people at a bigger disadvantage than the racist society already puts people in.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the – so what do you see taking that place, taking its place to do that? So that – if someone said, okay, we're going to do the test, and all of a sudden they said, okay, we're going to come back and give this test, and it's 5 years later, oh, this is just what happened, and popped the test down, and they gave them the test. And all of a sudden, and how do you get to the point where young people are able to read and discern, are able to think critically, are able to kind of deal with what's facing them in this century?
So for me, that touches on what Joel was speaking to, the idea of having culturally relevant teachings and also having the community, like having the education come from the community. The other piece is just having near peers. I mean, I think one of the things that happens is we pour a lot of resources into measuring what folks do with education mm-hmm. as is, and not necessarily as much resource or as much follow-up or as much follow-through with implementing policies or practices that are just kind of different, innovative. And so part of this is, I mean, we can talk about near-peer teaching. We can talk about community-based teaching, all those different types of things. I think for me, it's mostly just a question of if we can create a space where there is an alternative, can we do that and do that actively? I think there's all types of research. The Algebra Project is a case study in and of itself.
Yeah.
The students doing peer learning and actually helping folks learn the material that they couldn't quite get from the cultural others trying to teach them the same material.
Do you want to add to that at all?
I think that that's a pretty solid summary. All I can really say is that it's such an ingrained issue in our educational system today that, you know, I'm in a school 3-4 days a week, and the number one thing I hear from my students is, I can do this, you know, this math work. I can, like, translate this Spanish sentence. I can do it, but I don't understand what it means because my teacher can't explain that to me.
What does that mean?
So it means that they can do all the mechanical skills. They can add the numbers together. They can subtract them. They can plug the digits into the formula. But if you were to ask them to apply it independently, they would say, I have no idea what this is
good
for.
Gotcha.
And about 15 minutes of let's put this into your life. Let's see how these X's and Y's and these numbers relate to what it is you do every day. And then immediately they're like, well, why didn't my teacher just say that? And the response that I always give is they don't know that that's what they need to be saying because that's not what the school system is geared towards. It's not geared towards making sure that our students have a firm understanding and are able to apply these concepts.
Right.
It's can you spit them back out for the test?
It's not. It's can you do it, not do you get it?
Right. I mean, that's the whole problem with the way we're testing, period. I mean, mm-hmm. in a broader sense, that it's all about, as you were just describing, teaching to the test, teaching so you can pass this test, as opposed to teaching material so you can understand this material. And, oh, by the way, we'll test and see if you really understand the material. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's very two different approaches to
right.
So in what form is this boycott going to take?
So we're calling for a week-long boycott.
And when are the tests?
It's the week of April 18th.
Okay.
So what we're calling for is folks to – and that's right around the anniversary of Freddie Gray's death. We'll be doing a bunch of coalition work with Baltimore United for Change. We'll be doing a bunch of work with kind of the different universities. But essentially what we're calling for is for young people to not go take the test and then do something that is more impactful to their development, whether that be – something we're setting up a several teach-ins. They're going to be – activities going on in Gilmore Homes. We're working on putting together a block party for that Friday. Just different
activities. Where's that going
to
be?
That would be up in the Gilmore Homes area. So the plan is to just have folks go do different things in community-based organizations, having folks do stuff, even if it was like so one of the things we're working on is trying to get maybe like a group like the Algebra Project to have a workshop on one of those days about culturally relevant teaching or near-peer models so that folks can, even if they're not being paid and compensated to do it, they can work with their classmates to teach each other things. Or doing things like having LBS, Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, kind of put together a civics workshop for young people so that they can be better civically engaged and understand what's going on, especially during the time where we got the mayor's race going at the same time
right.
as the city council is going at the same time as the presidency.
All that's happening at the same moment. And the anniversary of
right.
Freddie Gray's death and the uprising and everything else. And maybe right. a trial starting.
Right.
For one of the officers accused in his death. All that could be happening at the same time.
Yep.
So in organizing a boycott, are you organizing through students or parents or both?
Well, so the – and actually earlier you asked a question about what makes our approach to this unique.
Yeah.
And a large part of that is the presence of students and the fact that these are students at the forefront of this movement. Like you mentioned, parents or school teachers in some other areas. But here it's very much not just a student-focused or student-led thing, but this entire initiative is being pushed by the young people in the high schools. So with Algebra Project specifically – all of our individual locations are doing their own work. So every school that we're currently in and tutoring in after school, the students there are doing their own work. Outside of that, we have various community partners who are in touch with the parents, et cetera. So we're really combating this at multiple levels simultaneously.
So I'm curious, you have these projects in the schools you're doing work. So I'm curious what the responses to the schools where you're working in these projects, tutoring and working with the students, telling them not to take the test. What is their response been?
They mad. This is it.
Really? How shocking.
Oh, yeah.
they're real mad. Actually, I can think of a few instances that have happened real recently with students organizing their own meetings to kind of organize the rest of the students in the school, and principals coming down and making statements like, oh, you know, that's not me. Don't boycott the test because that's just going to hurt you. Or, oh, don't boycott the test because that's just going to hurt my credibility. And as a principal, that's kind of weird for you to come and say. And there's also been instances where principals have been like around while students were in their organizing meetings and wouldn't sit down with them, but showed very clear body language for disposition or opposition for it.
Do you think that puts your work in jeopardy in those schools?
It depends on how you view putting the work in jeopardy.
Okay.
So the primary goal for us is the education and empowerment of our students. And so if at the end of this adventure the students are empowered and educated, then I'd say that it's a
success. Job well done.
Independent of what that does to my own finances. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
And I mean, the other thing is, right, I think that what happens often is we get in these spaces and the adults are angry. Girl, we don't want you to do things because it stirs trouble. But I think often what needs to happen is that kind of that refreshing of what it's like to have student insurgency and student power stem up. I mean, yeah, I think one thing is that BAP does a decent job of
doing Algebra Project.
Algebra Project does a good job of doing our work. and other organizations do a good job of doing that work. So the track record is there. I think that instances where a principal would make the decision to dismiss our program based on the student organizing would be a bad decision on their part, because they have no real reason beyond, I don't like what you're doing. And that's kind of weird. And the other thing is, students are already demonstrating that they're going to organize for what they want or against what they don't want. And I think that it would be a – I think it'd be interesting to see what happens if a principal was like, oh, we're going to get rid of your program while the students are coming regularly. These are student jobs we're talking about. This is a space where young people feel like it's a safe space in their school, away from whatever else stresses that they may have. I'm curious to see what that would be.
So if when the boycott happens, all these tests starting around the 18th, the park tests, from what I understand, you're saying that the students wouldn't stay in school. They'd be out doing
stuff.
Right.
Stuff.
Stuff, whatever that stuff is.
Right. So the idea is that part of this is that we've been doing petitions and we're getting feedback from folks about what kinds of activities they like to engage in, what kind of freedom schools they like to have, so to speak. So part of this is the workshops aren't set in stone because it's fluid, because the idea is that the education that should be happening should be driven by the folks that are receiving it. So if folks say, yeah, we want a finance workshop, or we want to learn some math, or we want to do whatever,
right,
then we'll put that together.
So people want to get in touch with Algebra Project about this, how they do it.
Hashtag Rosa Parks, and also hashtag no parking. We've been using those hashtags to chronicle stuff. We've actually posted a picture of some videos and some pictures of some memes. We've been doing some street teaming in communities. We did Douglas, and we're actually working in some other areas more close to the east side now. But police officers have been going up and pulling the memes down, the flyers down as we go. There's actually a video of a police officer going up and pulling down each one of the flyers that we hung up Mondawmin a few days ago. So there's that. And then the other thing is our Twitter handle is @AlgebraProject. And, of course, the website is www.BaltimoreAlgebraProject.org. And then the Instagram page is just Baltimore Algebra Project.
And we'll put all that on our website at steinershow.org. And we'll go out with Cut, right?
Cool.
We'll go out with Cut. You just heard Jamal Jones, co-director of the Baltimore Algebra Project. Before that, Jordan Najee Leonard, business manager for the Baltimore Algebra Project, organizing students to boycott the park test coming up on April 18th. Gentlemen, thanks so much. Good to see y'all.
They need the cutty.
Better get your act right before we get the class tight and organize a mass strike. Better get your act right before we get the class tight and organize a mass strike.
May I heard this song and act like she know nothing. They get it tough to us and all of us gon' thug it. That's way too frail, they need to cut it. They just want to see us fail, they need to cut it.